Okay, I'm set to go. Let's get this post started. 9:45. I think it's time to start. I think it's time to start. Are you excited? Like, second last day. It's not the first session. My friend Pete had the lovely privilege of going up first, which is always tough. I was up first yesterday, so I got to sleep in a little bit, but not too much, because I also had to attend some sessions. I saw a really good session over there on Office 365 deployment, how that works. But in this room right now, we're going to be talking about server, we're going to be talking about infrastructure, we're going to be talking about upgrades, talking about migrations. This is the room to be in if you want to get your infrastructure geek on right now as far as infrastructure is concerned. I find infrastructure doesn't get a lot of love from, you know, the marketing folks and everything else that's out there, because this is what the dial tone is for your network. This is what keeps people logged in, keeps people working. You only ever hear and touch your infrastructure when things go wrong, basically, and that's when you have to go off and fix it. In case you haven't already figured out from my accent and also from my accoutrements, my name is Rick Claus. I'm a Canadian down here in the wilds of Australia. And I work for Microsoft Canada. I'm a technical evangelist, and my good friend Jeff Alexander saw me do some stuff up in North America Tech Ed and said, dude, you got to come down, you got to experience Australia and come down and try out Tech Ed. And I'm like, sure, let's go, let's figure this out. But the first thing that happens, generally speaking, when people start to know when I come from Canada, is they have a little bit of assumptions that people have with regards to what is Canadian with the Mountie, the beaver. I don't know if there is an equivalent to the beaver in Australia, if that's the platypus or whatever, but someone was telling me that the platypus is dangerous and it actually is poisonous and is trying to kill you, like everything else in Australia. The spiders, the jellyfish. Like, I went on a plant tour to go see the rainforest with my friend Betsy Weber, and I didn't touch anything because the guide had us completely terrified of touching anything in the forest because everything wants to kill you in Australia. And I didn't touch anything. I come back and I go back to the hotel room. I'm doing my work and updating some slides. And then I rub my eyes because my eyes are itchy. It's getting tired. And within 30 seconds, my eyes start to puff up. I'm like, I didn't touch anything. And I'm still having this kind of reaction. So medical emergency averted. Got the medic up there and just rinsed out my eyes. It's all good. And things progress. But it got me thinking about what else do we have that kind of unites the Commonwealth between Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the rest of us. And really, there's one thing. We're not American money. We have a lot better looking money. Australia's got some really cool high-tech money, as you guys know. I just found out about this. It's plastic. You can't rip it. And it's designed so that if it gets put in the washing machine, it comes out again, and it's still good. Whereas in Canada, you get a blob of goo. That's useless. You just lost all your cash. So Canadians have good-looking money, too. It's just not as high-tech as yours. I'm still trying to figure out the coins in Australia. The smaller, the more expensive they are. It's opposite to the way it is up north, which is bigger, the more expensive. That's our toonie there in the middle, what that looks like. Now, we have a religion in Canada. It's known as hockey. And I was trying to find the equivalent for what it is down here in Australia, again, for similarity's sake. And I had the assumption that it was going to be rugby, but then I came to realize that I need to experience rugby. Oh, sorry, that's the wrong picture. That's the picture I meant to have, with the Australian rugby team that's there. And I managed to secure myself a ticket to go see the match last Saturday. And I, of course, went off after leaving New Zealand and got myself a rugby shirt to be able to wear. I guess you guys call it a jumper. But it's the wrong one. And so I realized that that would be very faux pas to do and wear this particular shirt, especially after you guys beat us, or them, or the Blacks. And so I made sure to switch out to the appropriate one. But then someone said, well, how come you're not supporting Canada for rugby? And it's like, well, I didn't even know we had a rugby team. And it turns out we do. And so doing a little bit of research, here's where we happen to stand in the standings. Notice that you guys are at the top, and we're at the bottom, but we're not last. And I found another similarity that we happen to have. We're both better than Americans at rugby. So that's obviously very good, right? Now, I said, okay, well, just how good is this Canadian rugby team? And what can we do to go off and support them? Because I'd be damned if I could find a Canadian rugby jersey down here in Australia or New Zealand. So looking at the All Blacks, they absolutely trounced us with points and games played, and you know, only getting 9 points per game against New Zealand for Canada. But then Australia, you guys have played us more, and you also beat the snot out of us too. But you're at least nicer, and you let us get 0.25 more points than the Australia, than the New Zealand team did. So for that, I say thank you. And I'm like, okay, well, there's got to be a similarity that we can have between rugby and our national sport, which is hockey. And I'm like, ice. There's got to be ice, or you know, something like that, where we can combine padding and skates and ice rinks with rugby and turn it into some kind of morphed solution. And I found out you guys do, in fact, use ice. But not for what I think you'd be using it for, basically just keeping your injuries there. And that also kind of freaked me out. You got medics that run onto the field and fix things while the game is still going on. You don't stop it, which is, again, very cool. But then I'm like, okay, well, there's got to be another ice sport that we can play at some point in time. And then I discovered that, hey, there is an Australian hockey team. And someday we'll see this matchup, and you guys can come on up to Canada and then watch us play hockey together. And then see who wins and what goes on from there. My name is Rick Claus. We're going to get started here with some infrastructure, some interesting stuff just to share with you some similarities. I'm very glad to be here. I do have two containers of maple syrup that I'll be giving out for good questions or good participation during the session. So this isn't the table syrup stuff. This is the stuff that came out of trees, made it through biosecurity scanning hazards when I came across the border, and is now here today as some possible giveaways. But as far as infrastructure is concerned, what are we going to be talking about? We're going to say, okay, infrastructure, as I mentioned, it's the heartbeat of your network. It's the dial tone of your network. Without infrastructure, nothing works inside your environment. It is usually what I call the poor second cousin that no one looks at because it's been set up once and then just left alone. So let's find out where your infrastructure is at. And then I'm going to introduce you to this lovely company you've probably never heard of before called Contoso. And believe it or not, we actually have to use Contoso because it's a legal company that doesn't exist that Microsoft created so that there's no copyright infringements. There's a whole Wikipedia page about Contoso, wingtip toys, tailspin toys, and all sorts of that stuff if you're interested. But I'm pretty sure you guys are not here for slides. So we're going to be doing demos and more demos and more demos and more demos. And just in case I run out of time because I get a lot of questions or a lot of involvement, I've gone ahead and Camtasia'd screencast all of my demos and made them available in high-def format, and they're posted up on the blog, regularitguy.com. You guys can go and download them and take a look at them yourselves in case you want to look at them after the fact. This session was also done in North America. Don't look at that session in North America. The video was crazy. Things weren't working. It was just a nightmare, so skip that one. This is the better one. This is the best one to watch, and you're here live. And then I'll give you an action plan. All set? We're good? You guys are awake. I at least got five people with thumbs up. That's a good sign. My favorite quote from a customer. A couple years ago, I did the session that was called upgrading to the Active Directory Nirvana, upgrading to Active Directory 2008 R2 on your systems. And when I took that across the country and in Canada and took it to North America, I got a lot of people that came down after the fact and asked me these questions. Like, how do I do my file servers? How do I do my print servers? And what about certificate services? And I'm like, well, you know what? Good question. Here's the resources. Here's the resources. And I got tired of saying, here's the resources. So I made a session. And this is the result of it. But one of those things, one of the quotes that I got that I really enjoyed about infrastructure was from a customer that basically said, if I had a dog when I deployed my infrastructure, that dog would be dead now because it's over 11 or 12 years old, and most smaller dogs don't live that long. And so I thought it was rather morbid, but at the same time also very poignant. You don't touch your infrastructure once it's set up unless the hardware's about to fail and you got to replace it. It's, again, it's not very sexy, but let's make this sexy again. Let's put sexy back in infrastructure. So your infrastructure might be over 11 years old, might be even older. You know, what did it look like? This used to be my server room. Not structured wiring, not cooling, not cabinets. The air conditioning wasn't there and had a fan blowing air on it and stuff like that. And that was running the business, was that, as an example, as for a solution. The projects that I was working on was an NT4 to Server 2000 upgrade with its whopping memory requirements of 1.5 gigabytes of RAM. 256 megabytes of RAM, 1.5 gigabytes of hard drive space for a server install, and it was this revolutionary thing that originally during the beta was called .NET server, and then they dropped that, thankfully, and went to 2000 server, and then went on from there. So I did a lot of consulting work with Active Directory design and stuff like that, so it was a lot of fun. That was one of my first ones to do. For big projects, so lots of fun stuff in there. But when you go off and talk to customers, when you're talking to people inside your organization, generally speaking, with infrastructure, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Leave it alone. And I'm going to challenge you to say, break it by fixing it to a newer version. And you'll be able to take advantage of a lot of really cool things that you couldn't do before, hopefully freeing up more time for you to do stuff and then make yourself more productive. So, with that, our scenario, because I don't like to just show slides, our scenario is going to be that we're working for this company called Contoso Bank. We're running Active Directory at 2003 levels. We currently have gone through part of the upgrade process for Active Directory 2008. We've got multiple region offices. We've got older hardware that's running our main core infrastructure of DHCP, DNS, file and print servers and stuff. We've got certificate services installed. But most importantly, we don't have a lot of cash. We have to do this for free. For free tools. The only resource that we have is time to be able to get this done. So we don't have the ability to bring in some external consultants. You guys are all here to be those consultants, to basically do this kind of an upgrade when you go back. Some challenges at Contoso that they're faced with come down to, well, you know what? There's time constraints. We're busy. We got to keep the lights on. Got to keep the users happy. We've got budgetary issues with the fact that potentially the project is not officially recognized. I got to swap this sort of stuff out on weekends and other stuff like that. The IT department might not be viewed as a big value add back to the business, so it's not easy to get projects initiated, perhaps. You haven't been able to draw the dotted lines. And then finally, the I.O. model, which I find is actually quite handy for the viewing of how mature your infrastructure is and how automated things are to make your life easier, you're currently at what's known as the basic level, which is a lot of sneaker net, a lot of getting things done, putting fires out, reacting as opposed to being proactive. That's the part where you happen to be currently inside this Contoso environment. So you're faced now with a migration versus in place. How do I get this done? Can I just take a disk and then plop it into the system and do an upgrade? And well, potentially, but let's stop for a minute and take a look at the advantages of going one way or the other. A migration is where you take the data and the config and you pick it up and you plop it onto a new system. It's a clean install. I like those. Those are very nice for a migration. Whereas in place is where you go off and you leave everything where it is and you basically upgrade the OS, provided you're allowed to. You guys see that video of the guy that went and upgraded from Windows 1.0 all the way up to Windows 7 on YouTube in 6.5 minutes? There's a video of that. Every single OS Microsoft made, I think he skipped ME, I don't know why. But he made it all the way through. And we kept the shortcuts on the desktop. How's that for backwards compatibility, eh? Those shortcuts still were there by the end of it. Unfortunately, we're faced with a little bit of an issue because, you know, what are you going to do? An upgrade? Are you going to do a migration? So first show of hands, who here loves to do upgrades, in-place upgrades? Put up your hand. Everybody, come on. Three people in the room, and that's it. How about migrations? Who here prefers migrations? Absolutely. For the 10% that didn't answer, I'm assuming you're not awake yet, so we'll work on that. The good thing is, or maybe bad thing, for those that prefer the in-place option, is that from an x86 platform, there is no in-place upgrade option. You have to do a clean install. Anyone want to know why? Why is that? Pardon me? Architecture. The processor architecture, x86, doesn't just do, here, run upgrade.exe, and it works. First of all, upgrade.exe is a 64-bit binary, so you can't run it. But the architecture is completely different. The way it works is completely different. You can't do an in-place upgrade. So migration is basically the only way that we go. Now, the good thing is, with the benefit of a migration, it allows you to go from x86 to x64. It allows you to go from the option of going physical to virtual. This new thing, virtualization, is not just a fad. You should learn about it if you haven't already. Virtualization is a great option for almost all the different pieces I'm going to be showing you today, going virtualization. My other thing is also, hey, I'm pretty sure, now this is kind of funny, in Australia you guys don't call it Patch Tuesday, right? You call it Update Wednesday or something like that because of the time differences and stuff like that. So anyway, If you're worried about patching your servers and updating your servers on Update Wednesday, you will be doing that 80% less if you're using a server core install as opposed to a full server install just over the data that we have from the last year. So it's a good opportunity to look at server core, and we'll come back to that in a bit for why that's a good option. With a clean OS install, it generally means stability. You're not bringing all over your garbage or rubbish along with you. And then also, it reduces the risk in downtime because you can stand up your environment right next to your current operating environment during the day while things are going on, configure it, and then when you're ready, do the switch. And then if it doesn't work, switch back, and you haven't touched anything. So migration definitely has some good benefits to it. So we're going to be going down that road. So I'm going to ask you, why don't you do it? If you're in this room, it means you haven't done it yet. You're going to learn how to do it, hopefully. But what's stopping you? Huh? Time? Money? Maybe I'm waiting for Service Pack 1. It already came out. Overwhelm, perhaps. Lack of expertise. Too busy fighting fires. The things that I've heard from talking with people, generally speaking, just comes down to, you know what? I got too much stuff on my plate. I'm overloaded right now. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I don't know where to start. Where do I go? What do I do? This is your first step. This is the first step in your 12-step program. So basically, we can help, and we're going to get started and get her done. First off, where are the resources? After this session, go off and get to what's known as the TechNet portal. It used to be a portal. Now it's just a TechNet library article that talks about migration. It's inside the area to document Server 2008 R2 documentation. There's a whole section in there on doing upgrades and migrations. Gives you links to important information, links to scripts, links to documents, great sort of stuff that's on there. Plus also the migration has forums, has blogs and tools and scripts and everything else like that. So you're all in. Where do you find this guy? What's the URL? Use your favorite search engine. Thank you, Bing. Yes, use Bing and find it. Use Bing and find it, or you can just go to Microsoft.com/migration to be able to get access to that portal to take a look at it. Now, the migration process can be a little bit convoluted, and we're going to be jumping back and forth between my infrastructure in just a moment. I'm almost done with my slides. So the migration portal gives you the ability to go off and to prepare, to read the guidelines and where we go. Basically, we're going to be installing some migration tools. It's a feature on 2008 R2. You extract some packages, you deploy them to your servers, and then you go ahead and use some PowerShell commandlets and other tools to do the actual hard work. There are third-party tools you can buy, but we're going to be doing it the free way with all the tools that come with it for doing this. So you got a store server, you got a temporary server, you got a destination server. You'll see this whole architecture for how that works when we're going. Those tools also will support all of these scenarios. I'm not going to read them all off. You guys can read these, take a look at the slide. But basically, it can go from 2003 and above, from a full install to x64, two full installs, two core installs. And in fact, because I want to eat my own dog food, all the servers that I'm deploying today are going to be server core server installs as opposed to full, to show you that it's possible to do and manage on core. Physical or virtual, obviously mine are all virtual. So with that, I'm going to ask you to please seize this opportunity. Now's the time to do these changes when you're changing your infrastructure. Don't just do the same for the sake of, well, that's the way that we used to do it. Investigate core. It's way better to manage with 2008 R2, with the remote RSAT tools installed on Win 7, with the administrative tools turned on, or administrative access turned on to those boxes. Take a look at physical and or virtual. Virtual is the way to go for more flexibility. And then also, how can you go off and minimize the impact in your rollout process? Lots of good stuff that's in there. So let's get her done. Let's get started. I see I didn't update my deck correctly with the reference. So I was trying to make a diagram for this from Visio last night, but the laptop that I brought doesn't have Visio. So I made a diagram on some paper. This is our network, our 2008 R2 DC up in the top corner. I then have a file and print server, DHCP server, and certificate server that are all 2003. They're going to be migrated to my new boxes called FP1T, DHCP-T, CERT-T, for CERT, and then managed with the Win 7 box down below. That's what we're going to do. The first step with any migration process is planning. So we all have to start off our planning. So I decided to go off and to document a very detailed Gantt chart plan, and I came up with this instead. our plan is for this session is that we're going to, first of all, read up and plan. I gave you the resources. We're then going to go off, install some tools, finish that Active Directory migration project, do a DHCP migration, do some print server updates, some file server updates, and then certificate services, which I'm a little bit nervous about, and then we're all done. We've basically done all of our core infrastructure. So the first thing I got to ask you all right now, please, is if you could, everybody raise your right hand right now. Everybody, raise your right hand. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Repeat after me. I promise I will do my planning. Read, don't put your hand down, sir. Read all the guidance in the TechNet portal. So help me demo gods. Okay, good. You can put your hand down. We just finished our planning section. Now, let's go off and install some tools. The very first thing we got to do is we got to prepare our very first 2008 server. He's already up and installed. You then are going to go in and get the tools installed and extracted and make them available. Pretty simple stuff. Then on the 2003 server, we're going to take that extracted file that came off the 2008 server. We're going to install upon it. We're going to make sure there's enough space, make sure .NET is installed, PowerShell is installed, and then go ahead and copy the tools down, register them, and then we're good to go. So I'm tired of talking. I want to show. Let's go ahead and show with my first demo. What do we got? We've got our domain controllers right here and running, and then I've got all my resource servers. Obviously, this is all virtualized on my laptop to make this nice and portable because I didn't want to bring my whole server rack and room with me. And I've got a connection already over here to my 2008 R2 box. Before I continue on with this, I figured let's optimize some time. Let's actually go ahead and install the prerequisites. The prerequisites for 2003 is .NET runtime as well as PowerShell V1 installed on server 2003 on my systems. So with that, that would be my DHCP server, which is this guy here. As you can see up in the top, he's running 2003, so that's the right guy. Everything's good. And I have already copied down the files to my C drive and source. And if I make this a little bit bigger, this is the .NET runtime. He takes a bit of time to install, so I've already ran him. And then this right here is my downloadable file specific for x86 and PowerShell. This is the part we're going to have to do the install for first to get it going. I always forget if you double-click on this and it doesn't happen right away. I have to fill the time until it actually launches with something else. So there we go. That was enough time to be able to go off and to run the update. I was trying to come up with a joke, but I couldn't come up with them that fast. PowerShell V1 is fine for what this is going to be working with. Make sure that you read this entire licensing agreement and then hit OK. And then go ahead and start your install. While that's going off and finishing, let's actually go off because this is very time-consuming demos and go back to my 2008 server and start this install. So I'm going to go off here to my server manager. Again, you could do this through the GUI. Because I'm a command line junkie, I'm going to actually do it from the command line. I can add in the server migration feature set if I wanted to. I'm actually going to go ahead here and do this through PowerShell. So I've gone ahead and made my prompts a little bit bigger so you guys can see. Import module, and I'm going to say server manager to bring in server management capabilities in the PowerShell. I'm going to do an add Windows feature, and I'm going to say migration. That brings it up. It says true, which is good, which means it worked. Now that's done, believe it or not, I just need to go off here to an elevated command prompt and then change into the Windows directory, system32, server migration tools, do a dir on that, and we can see there is this utility called smigdeploy. That's the guy I'm going to be using. The PowerShell tools are already there. He's already set to go, but I have to extract that guy, basically. The command for that is I'm going to say smigdeploy utility, create a package that is for the architecture of x86. My operating system is Windows Server 03. My path I want to extract this to is c/source. And everything's good. Enter. Good. Fantastic. I just deployed the tools to the local box. To make this easy, because I don't want to have to simulate a USB stick and carrying this around to my servers, I'm just going to go ahead and share this out. to my administrator group, share that out, and now it's accessible and available for people to go off and to use. That's how hard, did you miss that? To get the package of migration tools for free out and working on my system. Back over here to my 2003 box, we can see that my Windows PowerShell install is finished, which is good. I can now go over here and change into, actually, you know what? Let's make this even easier. I'm just going to go and say W2K8R2DC. This is my sneaker net to my source files. This right here are the migration tools folder. I'm just going to copy that down to my local source directory. I'm going to open up a command prompt, change into source. And for this guy to deploy, all I got to actually do is simply run smig deploy. And then he's going to go off and register the PowerShell commandlets, extract the files, and make them all happy and working from the individual system. Pretty simple, pretty good, right? To make it so you guys can see, and while that's loading, I'm just going to go here and choose to make this a little bit larger and also make it so you guys can see better with the lovely lime green text. There we go. So my PowerShell tools are ready to go. Migration. Now, that was on a GUI environment. Let me show you how it works on the lovely and beautiful UI known as Server Core. That's all I have, basically, is a command prompt. Now, because this is typing intensive, I have gone ahead and created a couple of text files that have all the commands. If you're interested, I can make these available on my blog. You guys can download them. You don't have to write them down. I'm just going to go here and say Notepad Migration Tools on Core and make this so you guys can see it a little bit better. There we go. So first off, I'm going to do an OC setup. The thing I don't like about OC setup, oh, did I say that out loud, is that it doesn't give you any error messages. If you make a tiny little typo in this line, it won't tell you something didn't work. It'll just come back like that, and then you have to know that something didn't work. So make sure that you're installing the right things. On Server Core, the requirements are, so I make this a little bit smaller so you guys can see. On Server Core, the requirements are that you're going to go off and install .NET FX. We're going to go off and load PowerShell. We're then going to go off and load the PowerShell for Server Manager commandlets. So that's all good. Next up, I'm going to start a start server migration tools to bring in the migration tools. Again, no error message, just a slight pause. Unfortunately, I don't have Zoom it on Core. It doesn't work. And then lastly, I'm just going to go off and launch PowerShell. And then because I'm going to be using PowerShell once again, let's make this so you guys can see a bit better with this. And then go from there. So this is my PowerShell prompt now, and we're all good. Further on down, within PowerShell, I'm going to say load server manager. Add Windows feature. Migration. And it's done. It's installed. That's my first demo. Extract the tools, make them accessible, get them onto your source, proper architecture, in this case x86, get them on your server destination, which is Server 2008 R2, bang, boom, we are done. So with Windows Server Migration, basically you've got this commandlets that you're going to be running, get smig server feature, receive server, let's try this again, connect mouth to brain. Get smig server feature to find out what features are available, export settings, import settings, the ones I'm going to be using a lot for what this happens to be. And then the cool one that I like is for data. When I'm sending data across the system encrypted, I can use send data and receive data with send as smig server data and receive smig server data. I'll be doing all of these coming up during this demo. So there's our plan. We did the plan. We did the tools install. Next up, we got finish that Active Directory rollout project. So how the heck are we going to do an Active Directory rollout project in the time remaining, as well as all the rest of the demos that I have today? Well, to speed things up and to optimize for you guys, I thought I'd make this a lot simpler. Go ahead and do a search for Rick Claus WSV330 on your favorite search engine, which is?
WebWombat.
Web Wombat, nice, which is Bing. Go ahead, get yourself a coffee or a pint, based on what time of day it is, and then watch it. That's a very good video that talks about the upgrade process, shell game process of doing an Active Directory migration. That's available. It's also referenced in the blog post that's on the blog that you guys can go back and take a look at. So now that particular Active Directory project is done, let's go off and do our infrastructure, which is DHCP migration. Now with DHCP migration, it gets a little bit funky. First of all, you have to provision yourself some new hardware. Word of advice, needs to have the same number of NICs as the previous version of the server is running, or at least that many plus then some more you could use for something else. If you have not enough NICs, you're going to have to consolidate your scopes first before you do that migration, which tends to be a little bit tricky. So generally speaking, one-to-one matching ratio for your source DHCP server running 2003 to your destination server running 2008 R2. Do a backup, register the migration tools, stop the service so no new addresses go out, install the OS and get that up and running on the new guy, and then proceed to the migration steps. So without any further ado, let's see what this looks like. So with this one here, this is back on my temporary server that happens to be running with PowerShell, and he's all happy with migration tools. I'm going to go ahead and add in my DHCP system. So that's simply an add Windows feature DHCP. It's going to go ahead and start the installation, get it across, and says success is true, which means that it worked, which is good. Just to make sure it's not running, I'm just going to do this little get service command for DHCP server. And it's going to tell me and confirm the fact that it is stopped, which is good. Everything's all set. So that's good. So I'm just going to sit here and let him wait, and I'll come back to him in just a moment. This is my source server that's up and running. You can see here, it's Contoso DHCP. And just to prove to you that it actually is doing something, here's DHCP running. And I have a scope that is available. As you can see, there's even some people that are inside that scope. If I can get this to move, there we go, for the address pool, and I have leases that are live, and in case you can't see this, I'll zoom in, you can actually see that I have leases that are live. I also happen to have one reservation for my exchange box that's running as well in my system. So I've got real data in here. It's not very large because it's a demo environment, but it happens to be there. So first off is, let's go off because it's good prudence to do so. Let's go ahead and basically make a backup of this server for DHCP purposes. There we go. Made that backup. Pretty simple. Go back to my PowerShell commandlet, and let's do our very first one. Export SMIG server data. I'm going to say the feature ID is DHCP. I'm going to migrate out all users, all groups that happen to be on the system. I'm going to migrate the IP address, which you can do, which is rather cool, of the server. I'm going to save this to a migration file, which is called my temporary server, hyperv-1-migration-data/DHCP, so I know where to find it again. Give them a verbose output to see how it works. Hit enter. You have to lock up your migration files with a password, and then it goes through, collects the data, saves it up to that network server share, to which I will go off and on the receiving side, attach up to that guy with the PowerShell commandlet, put in the proper password, and bring over all those individual settings. You got to wait for the little spinny thing to finish. It's when you wish you had one of those fast forward buttons. Come on. Let's go. I know you're going. Almost there. Ah, there we go. Okay, reviewing what that verbose output looks like. I said here's the command line switches, DHCP local users and groups, IP configuration data, and IP and details for the DHCP services. They all came back as true, so that's good. Everything's fine. This guy basically now is still servicing clients, so I'm going to want to go in and basically shut him down. Before I do that, do a quick little netsh DHCP services, and I'm going to say delete server contoso-dhcp.corp.contoso.com 192.168.10.50. Why am I doing this? I'm deleting and deauthorizing this server from running. Any ideas? It's a demo. I don't need it. Thank you very much. No, that's not the answer. The answer is basically because I'm going to replace it with my temporary box. I don't care what the DHCP server's computer name is. All I care about is this address, because the way DHCP works, it says broadcast, I'm looking for an address. Broadcast, here's an address you can use. Broadcast, thank you very much, I'll take it. Broadcast, you got it for 8 days, whatever it happens to be. That's how DHCP works. If a client already has an address, he basically goes in and looks for the same server to answer his questions. And then if it can't find it, then it goes off and does something else. That interrupts the user. So by getting rid of this guy, I'm going to make this a lot easier myself. Before I do this, one thing I forgot to mention, I'm going to say ipconfig/all, and I'm going to save this information also to my temporary server, hyperv-1/migration-data/DHCP, and I'm going to call this ipconfig.txt. There we go. shutdown/5/s/t5, and this guy basically goes away, bye-bye, don't need him anymore. On the receiving side, because right now there's no one getting DHCP addresses from anybody, I'm going to want to fix that pretty quick. On my PowerShell side of things, I simply need to go in and, well, it's actually, first of all, one other piece of information I need to have is this guy's IP address, ipconfig/all. I'll tell you why in just a minute. One thing that I want to also do here is I'm going to say notepad migration of dhcp.txt. No, that's not the one I want to do just yet. Hang on a second. I want to say import dhcp. There we go. So this command line is going to be doing the actual import settings. And the thing that's noticed here is that you have to actually associate the source MAC address for the scope of the original guy with the destination address of the scope of the guy that's going to be receiving it. So basically it's a one-to-one matching. If you remember, I mentioned that you have to have that working correctly. Well, for that command line to work, so here I'm going to say notepad hyperv-1/migration-data/DHCP/ipconfig.txt. And then here is the source MAC address. That's why I saved that beforehand. And then this is the script for source. Paste it. And then here is the MAC address for my destination. And grab that. And then bring that over here. And this saves me a whole mess of typing for making this work. Back in the PowerShell, sit, paste, and while this guy runs, oh, did I forget this? Yes, I did. Typo in the... Oh, I forgot to get the tools in there for this guy. Hang on a second. Add PS snap in. Microsoft Windows Server Migration, sorry, Server Manager Migration. Micro, M-I-C-R-O. Thank you for catching that. There we go. So, make sure you initialize your commandlets before you try to run them. Imports SMIG server settings, feature is DHCP, bring in all users, bring in all computers, groups, bring in the IP configuration, source physical address to map is this, target physical address is that for the different scopes, force it to take place, here's the path for where to get the files, put in your password, Bob's your uncle. Now, you're going to see this guy spin and do some stuff, and then magically he's just going to stop and freeze. The reason why that's going to happen is because he's running a remote terminal server window to a IP address that is no longer going to be valid once it imports the new IP address configuration settings. And therefore, boom, as you just saw, importing, he just died. So I have to get rid of that guy. And then fire up my remote control session again in just a second to show you how that worked. So just quickly, I'm just going to go here and show it to you from my guy that's turned off. This is the guy that's turned back on again. I'm going to use my remote control guy here. Come on, bring it up. and make them full screen so you guys can see this better. So there we go. This is the end result of that address that took place. So you can see here, big verbose amount of information. Bring it all across, please. And then you can actually see bringing over the user accounts, bringing over the groups in case they're custom groups. And then also the down at the bottom here, where is it? Right there. Here's information for DHCP going off and working, and that's all good. So basically, I've just migrated my DHCP system correctly. Everything's good. Next up, I need to go off and do that netsh command for DHCP, and then bring in add server. Make this guy higher so you guys can see. Add server contoso-dhcpt.corp.contoso.com address of 192.168.10.50. And then enter. He gets added correctly, and he's good. So now finally, quit net. Actually, PowerShell prompt can do this easier. I'm just going to say start service DHCP server. And start DHCP server. Migration is now finished. I now have a working DHCP server. Yay. Tough crowd. To prove to you that it's working, just going to go over here and take a look at my client system for DHCP. I'm going to go off here and say managed authorized servers. And then look at this. I have DHCPT listed as an authorized server. I bring him up, and I take a look at the box. And I can see that he does, in fact, have IPv4. He has a scope. He has leases. And I also have all my data saved here for my reservations and also my existing leases. So everything's good. It came back just fine. And to prove to you also that it works, ipconfig/renew. Boom. That's how fast the client got the address, because the address was the same. There's no timeouts, no rebroadcast, and my lease is still valid. That guy's migrated. Now that deserves applause. Yay! Work with me. I pressed the button. Try that again. So, post-migration. Troubleshoot migration if necessary. No troubleshooting was required because it worked. Rollback migration if necessary. What would be involved for a rollback? Pretty easy. I turn the temporary guy down. I turn the main guy back up again. I reauthorize him. Bob's your uncle. He's done. That's all the rollback process is. Retire the source server, reprovision if you need to, reformat them, turn them into a game server, whatever you need. Just shut them down. The hardware is old. You don't need it anymore. So, following along my list, what do I got left? I happen to have my print server migration and my file server migration. I'm going to start a caveat with this. Big caveat. And the big caveat happens to be print server migration, the biggest pain in the derriere you're going to have is drivers. Who makes print drivers? Anybody? Who makes them? Yes, the correct answer is not Microsoft. Who makes them? The manufacturers. Go out, do an inventory of your printers, find out what drivers you need to have, get the most recent versions, and get the 64-bit versions as well as the 32-bit versions. You might have to make do with a universal driver as opposed to the 95 megabyte full-feature 4-in-1 printer that does scanning, coffee making, and everything else, because it doesn't work in a networking environment in 2008 or 2. Who knows? It varies by manufacturer. So go off and do your research to find out what drivers you need to have. Go get them, download them, get them ready to go. Make sure that you're going to be using the proper tools. We're actually not going to be using PowerShell for this one. Yay! We're going to be using GUI tools for this particular implementation, with simply using Server Manager and Print Manager. Pretty simple sort of stuff. And then you go off and you migrate it. Now, the big thing is that you have to make sure with this one that the computer name changes, because all those printers are mapped with computer name that gets resolved to an IP address, as well as possibly the IP address as well. So make sure that you got both of them available, and this is going to be a bit more of a shell game that we have to do to make this individual one work. I'm actually going to kind of combine the next two demos together, because file and print is file and print, but I've broken it down into two different steps because it's two different sets of tools. So, print server migration. It's a different batch of tools, but it's not too bad. So let me go off over here, and I've got my main file and print server that's up and running. I've got my temporary file and print server, which is this guy, which is, again, a server core install. But believe it or not, this migration process starts with my main production management box, which is my 2008 box. All these tools are found inside your Print Manager utility. So just go over here, go into Features, say Add Features, take a look at Printing. No, not Features. What am I saying? Yes, I want to cancel. That's a role, Rick. It's a role. That's what you want to do. Thank you. Printing and Document Services. Printing and Document Services will install the proper tool. You're not actually going to install any print servers on this guy, but it just gets the tools installed on the local console to be able to work with this. It's a lot easier to do it with this one, believe it or not, than it is to do it with the RSAT tools for the migration on a Windows 7 box. It's easier to do it on the server for this particular one. So once I've got the tools installed, I'm just going to fire up my Print Manager utility, which is found here. There we go. And you'll see that I have one print server listed, which is the local box. So pretty simple. I'm going to say add the server. That's my source, Contoso-FP1. Add to list. Apply. Bring it in. Take a look at Contoso-FP1. What's he got? Well, he's got some drivers. Again, this is a demo environment, so I've kept it pretty simple. But notice this right up here. All x86, so it's the wrong architecture. If you're going to do this migration successfully, every single x86 driver that you have installed has to have the equivalent 64-bit driver installed before you do the migration. That's why you have to do your research on getting things already all set to do. So the way that we actually add new drivers to the source guy remotely is simply say add drivers. Go through, and this is extremely important. Turn this guy off and only turn on this guy. That will ensure that you're getting the 64-bit driver inside your system. I've got a half disk because I've already done my research. Hyper-V-1/source/printers/HP LaserJet 2300. It's a very high-end, expensive printer. That's a joke. And I've got one printer here for the PCL5 driver. Say finish. It's going to copy some files over. I mentioned you have to have it for both, or for all drivers, sorry. So let's go ahead and do that again for add another driver, just in case you missed that. Turn off x86, turn on x64. Do another halve disk. This time the drop-down box is populated. And get the second guy in there and finish. And then the files are good. He's got it. Everyone's happy. So now, as you can see, I've got the proper configuration of both x86 and x64 for every single one of my print queues. That's the main first prerequisite. Next up, I'm going to go off and very simply say, you know what? Let's go ahead and say export these to a file. I right mouse click on it. I say export. Next, where do I want to put it to? My temporary server, Hyper-V-1, migration data, /printers. File name of printer. It goes and does the export. It does the ports. It does the queues. It does the drivers. It does the settings. It does the ACLs. Does everything. Dumps it all over to the main temporary storage area that I'm using right now on my Hyper-V box for that particular data. While that's finishing off, let's go back over to my... look at this. Completed with no errors. Finished and done. Go over to my temporary box. As you can see up here, the name of the server is called FP1T, and I'm going to install a couple of roles. The first one I'm going to install is start OC setup, and this is where I'm going to make sure I type this in correctly, please. Printing server core role. You didn't help me out, guys. There we go. There's the pause. You know it's working with the pause. If it comes back fast, it doesn't work. Now, while this is also doing this, I'm going to pre-stage the next demo that's coming up for the file server migration as well, since I'm here. So I'm going to add in the additional roles that I'm going to need for file services, which is core file server. A little bit of a pause, which means it worked. And I'm also going to choose my DFS N server. Or distributed name services, or distributed file services, and as well here, my FRS infrastructure services as well. And he's done. to finish this off, coming back over to my 2008 domain controller that has my print management tools. Go in here and simply say, not add printer, add print server. Contoso FP1T that I want to add. There he is. There's my server. And he's happy. Pretty simple. To prime the juices to make this guy happy with actually getting the spooler set up and getting the different file shares set up and stuff like that, it's actually easiest to go in here and simply say, add a printer to this guy remotely. I'm going to just dump him onto a junk port. I don't care what driver I'm going to use. I'm just going to take all the defaults and then share them out and then simply get them done. That just kind of gets things ready to go and gets the bubbles to start, if you will, in the water. Installs the printer, it gets it all ready to go, and everything's all fancy and done. That's a lot easier to be able to then go in here and say import printers from a file. Pretty simple. The place that I stored it, Hyper-V, -1, migration data, printers. Hyper-V-1/migration-data/printers. There's the file. It's going to read that from the file, say, okay, you got a couple of queues there. You got some drivers. They all match up. And then let's say go ahead and do that install. It's going to ask me, hey, do you want to go and republish these things back to the Active Directory if they were manually published before? I'm going to say, sure, you know, go ahead if they were done. But otherwise, don't bother with it. Say next, import the settings, restoring the drivers. Takes a little bit of time, at least it's not PowerShell that you're looking at right now. And it comes back with everything's all done. In this case, it actually might come back with a little bit of an error. And that little bit of an error basically says, hey, I couldn't actually use the exact same file location for the spool because the architecture changed, the file structure for where x86 and x64 stuff is stored is different. So it's actually going to throw a small error message. But if you read the full error message, it's going to come back and tell you, I just couldn't use the old one. I'm using this new one now. Just to let you know, it's a little triangle warning message. And there it is. And so I can go through here and take a look at the event viewer if you guys wanted to see that error message that happened to be there. Yep. Different processor architecture, can't use the same spot. You guys okay? Good. The main part is everybody's happy with that particular one. Now, I'm not quite finished this just yet because the spooler service is running, the share is there. However, I don't have my files over there for file and print, so I'm going to come back and finish this demo off, if you will, in just a moment. But just to show you that the share is now working, here's my Win7 client, NetView, here's my source server, Contoso-FP1. That's what he should look like with marketing and sales file servers, or marketing, sales, and public file services, and HP marketing, HP sales. And then here's FP1T. So he just has, well, you can get rid of the brother printer if I wanted to, the HP marketing and HP sales. And then we have to get those file services up and going in there. So we'll come back to that in just a moment. You guys are doing great. By the way, there's a lot of command line demos in here. So we did our print server. We got two things left, file services and certificate services. I'm going to warn you right now, certificate services might be tight for time. I'm going to say leave some time for some questions. That one has been recorded. We can take a look at it after the fact when we're done, unless or if we don't have time to get through and complete this. So with file services, basically, this is a big chunk of data. You're going to want to try to clean stuff up ahead of time to make things easier, back up your system, possibly worry about and migrate over any DFS settings you might happen to have. Maybe you got some stuff for backing up Active Directory services as well. To keep things simple, I'm not going to be doing the shuffle command, if you will, for distributed file services. The reason why is because it takes too much time for me to wait for Active Directory replication. The basic process is, if you got DFS running right now, your name server is inside Active Directory, and he's doing the replication, you bring up a new temporary guy, you add him into the DFS namespace, you wait for it to replicate, you take the old guy out. And then when you're done doing a temporary file server and you've renamed them back to the same name, you bring them back into that name service, wait for it to replicate, and you get rid of the temporary guy. That takes about 25 minutes, and I'm not prepared to wait for that for this demo. So I'm not going to be doing a DFS migration. Inventory your files, inventory your settings. Calcs is your friend to do some documentation for you. You won't need it, though, but it's there as a backup. Get the main server going for temporary side of things. Notify users you're going to be doing this migration. You don't do this one during the day. Do this one in the evening. And then you're going to have to possibly do like multiple migrations to make sure that you get all the data across. It will preserve all the ACLs, all the files, all the shares. Everything else will happen correctly using this process. So that's a good step. Now, for the file server migration itself, the process is you freeze any administrative changes so you don't screw up DFS after you've set it up and made it ready to go. You also go in and you export your settings. You migrate all your local groups because you're all using local groups to protect your ACLs on your file servers, right? Right? It's much more efficient to do that, in case you didn't know. Migrate the data from source to destination. You're going to be doing it twice. Once is the first big batch, second time is the delta. And then migrate over the identity of the server with doing some funky switches of identity and IP addresses, and then go ahead and configure DFS back again. So I'm going to skip that last step and actually go ahead and do this part of the demo. So with that, just going to see if I got everything I need to have here, all set to go. So with my temporary server, helps if I have the right screen on. Now, I've already gone ahead and configured my temporary server with the prerequisite install files. Remember, the core server, file server, DFSN server, and FRS and the infrastructure. That's the main part of the setup that I have to do on that guy. The second part of the setup is actually easiest done, or most easily done, using remote administration tools. So I'm just going to go over here and fire up my server manager on my Win7 client. I'm going to connect up to Contoso-FP1T. And then here, I'm going to put in a firewall exception. Only one small exception. The tool to migrate the data encrypted from your source to destination uses port TCP port 7000 and UDP port 7000. By default, those are blocked. So I'm going to open that up on my file server that's the destination using remote management tools. So here's configuration on that guy, my firewall, inbound rules, make a new rule that is a port 7000 TCP, get the right zero in there, and it's going to be available for all connections to be allowed in. I'm going to keep it simple and make it available for all my networks, and it's going to be called TCP migration, call it whatever you like. Do another rule for UDP migration as well, based on port. Just make sure you switch this guy over here to UDP, 7000, hit next. Allow the connection across my domain, UDP migration, and then finish. And then boom, those guys are now set and ready to go. Not too bad. Now, from my main file server, which is Contoso FP1, I'm going to go in here and launch my migration tools PowerShell window. I'm going to change the font size because he's a bit large, so you guys can see better. There we go. I have to, first of all, migrate the local users and the local groups over to the other guy. So I'm going to be doing an export, make server settings. I'm going to say take all the users, take all the groups, and I'm going to say send that to a path of Hyper-V. -1 migration data local groups verbose, lock it with a password, and then bring it across. While it's migrating, let me just show you the data I'm going to be bringing across. Down over here is the data share that has marketing, public, and sales. If I take a look at, for instance, sales and or security for sharing, you'll see that it's protected by a local group. That's called Contoso Sales Share. So that's a local group that has to be migrated. Pretty simple stuff. Now, on the receiving end for my temporary file server, I'm going to go off in here and bring in those groups first. So import SMIG server settings. You know what? I didn't bring in the tools once again. Fire up PowerShell. Add PS snap in for Microsoft Windows Server Manager migration. There we go. And do a import SMIG server settings for users, groups, path of Hyper-V dash one, migration data, local groups, that's where it's stored, verbose. Bring in the password. How did I spell that wrong? Hyper-V1 migration data local groups with an S. Whew. You have to have the local groups migrated first before you do the data migration. Why? The SIDs are not there. The ACLs can't be built if the SIDs aren't there for the local groups. You can take a look at this particular guy here to see that, look at this. Seattle sales, New Orleans sales, New York sales, Ottawa sales, they're all happening correctly, so that migration worked correctly down in my individual box. And then now for the actual real fun, let's go ahead and migrate that data. So from my file server, my main guy over here, which is running with migration tools, I want to say send SMIG server data for a computer name of Contoso-FP1T. The source path of c/data, the destination path of c/data, and I want to say recurse all subdirectories, include all files, and force it to happen, lock up a password. And then look at this, opening connection, run this on the other side. So I'm going to window this guy so you guys can see it up there. Come back to this guy, and I'm going to simply say receive SMIG server data because he's already set up to receive it. So there's the sending, there's the receiving, and put in the password. Look at that. Waiting, preparing, doing stuff. It'll magically end with the data going across, filling the time, filling the dead air. To encrypt that data and to send it. Like now. It's really coming. If you hit it, it goes faster, right? Ah, there we go. Ooh, it goes across. That's a ooh, you can do that sound effect. Thank you. Okay, data's been migrated. It's good. Finalizing the migration, things are good. The sending side goes ahead and freaks out and kind of shows you all the stuff that was migrated in case you wanted to see it all. There it was. Now this guy here, shut down, //T5 to get rid of him. And he is now gone. This guy over here, I'm actually, again, going to attach up to him using this particular remote control utility because it's IP address independent. And I'm going to say Control-Alt-End to log on to him. And this guy, before I join, I need to basically change the computer name, change the IP address, and then make them all happy. Before I do that, I forgot, I have to get rid of the old computer account. So back here in my domain controller, Active Directory users and computers. Again, I could do this from the command line if I wanted to, but I'll do it this way. Under computers, I have the old guy that's still there. I got to get rid of him and get the new guy in there. So basically take him, bye-bye, delete him. He's now gone. This new guy that's running, where is he? This guy right here. Well, what do I got to do? I need to go in and change the computer name. sconfig. Computer name is currently with a T. Contoso-FP1 is the new computer name. Here's my administrator account. Here's my password. I hit enter. I swear I did. My server is coming down with a case of the slow blues. You know what? Let's try that again. Computer name change. I forgot to put in the reference. Contoso-FP1. Corp-administrator. Password. Boom. That time it worked. I don't want to restart this guy just yet because he has the wrong IP address. So I need to set the IP address to, so that's under 8 for network settings, 1 for that network card, set a new IP address, a static address of 192.168.10.40 is the server, 255.255.255.0 is the mask, 192.168.10.20.1 is the gateway, and then finally set my DNS settings. What? Why didn't he change? Set network adapter IP address. Is that old guy still up and running? No, he's down. Try that again. 192.168.10.40. No, static. 192.168.10.40. Thank you. 192.168.10.1. That time it worked. Okay. Set the DNS server. 192.168.10.20 is the DNS server. Boom. And then return to the main menu. Do a restart to the server. And that guy restarts and comes back up again. 7 minutes left. Can he finish this? Come on. Come on. We can do it. He comes back up. And let's see what we got from our client perspective. So there we go. He's up and booted and running. So that's all good. The old guy's turned off. Here's my client. If you remember, my old share was this guy. He's not going to be able to be found because he doesn't exist anymore. My new guy is FP1. Not FP1T. And boom, there he is. And you know he's the proper guy because there's that old junk printer I just did for the ability to start the queue. He's there. Here is the disks, and also here's the print queues, and everything is good for being able to have access to it, and he's migrated. Net use the next available drive to contoso-fp1/marketing. Change to the Z drive. Boom. There's all the stuff. It's all good. It migrated fine. I have access to it. It's all good. That warning message up above is basically the server manager saying, hey, I can't talk to FP1T anymore. That's because FP1T doesn't exist. So I can just dismiss that message, and he's good to go. And that brings him out. Close that off. Bring him back to this. And let's quickly see if I have enough time for certificate services to come through. Verify your migration, troubleshoot if necessary, roll back the migration if it doesn't work. Again, we didn't modify any major stuff on the old system. We can simply, if we needed to back out, shut this new guy down, delete the computer account, add the computer account back in again from the original guy, and then he boot him back up again, and he's basically going to magically work, and he's good. Roll back the migration if necessary. You don't have to retire the source server to use him for something else. File and print is now done and finished. In the interest of time, I really only have 5 minutes left. I don't want to rush through the certificate services migration. So at this point, I'm going to say, let's take a look at that from a video perspective after the fact. But for certificate services, it's all from the command line, certutil.exe. You have to install it. There is a VBS script that will show you how to do the install of certificate services on server core. That is probably the most gnarly job you have to do for that migration. But the script is made for you, and I've got a link to it in the slides. You can download and have access to it. Very, very simple with a couple of command lines. And using the existing tools For instance, with GUI on 2003, I simply say, take my certificate server, export the certificate and the database, save it to a location. That's all through the GUI. Once that's done, I then save that up there. I save the registry parameters, and then I save the registry parameters. I get a quick list of all the different templates that are in use. I then go in and basically stop certificate services on the old guy. I then remove certificate services, which gets rid of the stuff that needs to be updated from the Active Directory perspective. And it leaves the certificate and also the database on the local drive in case you need to back out again and turn it back on. Then I basically fire up that script on the right-hand side of the new certificate server. I boot them up with the same computer name, same IP address. I join them into the domain. I load certificate services, run this script, and then certificate services comes up and comes back. So that demo and that video is recorded. I did a Camtasia of it. It's up on YouTube, and it's on my blog post at regularitguy.com. And you guys can take a look at that quick little video. It's about 15 minutes in full high def to go off and take a look at. With that, boom, we just did certificate services, and we're done, which means, hurrah, you can now save your documentation plan. Go off and celebrate with your mates, because you just did your migration, and everything is good. And with that, it's not we can help, really. You guys can now help, because you have all the data for what you need to do this kind of migration. And you all took the oath of promising to do your research and everything else. So your action plan, you've already done your planning, but really go back and do your real planning for your system. Test out the tools in a trial lab. All this was done with a trial lab, obviously. Seize the opportunity for change. Invest in virtualization. Invest in Server Core. You will not regret it. Server Core is beautiful when it's remotely managed. Test your backout strategy. Document your plan better than I did with my notepad. You definitely want to document stuff, and then go from there. All these links are live. The slide decks, I'm told, will be available within the next 24 to 48 hours from the Schedule Builder site. That's also, incidentally, where you need to go off and do your evals, because I'm really hoping that you had a good time with this particular session. I do have a couple of minutes left to be able to take a couple of questions. After that, of course, you're also welcome to come down and we can talk as well. But I don't want to interrupt your morning tea, because apparently tea is next, right? Is that next? For what's up? So that's good. And so with that, some time for Q&A. Oh, sorry, not Q&A. It's actually Q&A, because we're in Canada. Thank you very much, everybody. I had a great time. We got some questions and some time. So as I mentioned, I have two maple syrups to give away for good questions, so I want to see some fights for that. Yes, sir. Up in the back. Does it do disk quota management with the migration of your file servers? I've never actually had that question before. very good question. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to say, I'm going to have to look for you because I've never checked. It's a very good point. The disk quota stuff is stored in parallel in NTFS. I would have to assume that it would, but I don't want to say that until I check that out in my lab. So tell you what, come on down, get your maple syrup, get a business card from me, shoot me an email, and I'll make a good blog post on it, actually. Thanks for that one. This is real. This isn't table syrup. I was invited out to a pancake house last night by the Mulk, and I'm like, no, they don't have real syrup there. So I wanted to do that one there. Second question, anybody else? Another maple syrup up for grabs. Yes, with the Mac. Oh, no, I'm sorry, I can't take questions from Mac. Over here, anybody? Yes? I'm joking. As long as it's Windows 7 install boot camp. Good question. So what you're talking about is Windows 7 has what's now called the device stage, which is an enhanced driver, which shows you the nice pretty picture. Does it have ink in it? Does it have other stuff like that in Windows 7? Is there any way to manage that from the server? And the answer is basically, if you're using Windows 7 drivers properly from the manufacturer, that information gets loaded into the driver on the server. When the user connects up to it, installs that, that should come down correctly. If it doesn't come down in full, Windows 7 should, provided it has the right driver, go up and actually update that information from the manufacturer's website, provided you allow that with policy. So in essence, yes, it can be managed by the server centrally, but it needs to have the proper Windows 7 driver installed. Good? So you also get some maple syrup too. Don't forget your evals. Thank you very much, everybody. I had a great time.